I was driving to the exam, like, get me in there. Some people clutch their pearls at this. You can only be emotionally motivated some of the time. Hello, welcome to the inaugural episode of the Ivy League MD podcast. My name is Alexander. This is episode one. I chose that jazz piece because for me, studying medicine is just like playing jazz. It might be chaotic and you might not know how you're going to get to the end, but you just have to do it. So this episode, I'm going to talk about, it might be a 3 or 4 part episode, I'll see how it goes, but I'm going to talk mostly about how I got into medicine and how I think what you need to do to get into postgraduate medicine. So there's a few sections I want to talk about. I'm going to talk about, you know, your approach to study, how to tackle the GAMSAT, how to do the interview, extracurricular stuff, and some strategies for actually applying, because I don't feel like that's covered enough in a lot of the resources out there. So let's start off with study. So first things first, I want to say, please do not go and study biomedicine. Now, this is something that is kind of, you know, hypocritical, because that's how I did it. I studied biomedical science with the goal, with the pure goal of trying to get into medicine. I was lucky because it worked out, but A, there's a lot of people that are trying to do that, and B, there are no jobs for you once you're finished. Basically, when you finish biomedical science, if you have a lab qualified job, because some of them aren't even accredited to work in labs, but if you have a lab accredited job, you're just going to work in a lab. And guess what? There aren't many jobs in that industry, and they're extremely competitive to get because everybody wants to do it. It's really cool. It's exciting. So just keep that in mind. So if I was, you know, doing this from day one, I would think about a job. You know, if you can do something like physio or podiatry or something like that, which I now know is a little bit more competitive to get into, and that might not be an option for you, but if it is an option, consider it, because in my course there, or even nursing, there are people who are physios, nurses, chiropractors, podiatrists, and what I want to do is get some people on here to talk as podiatrists and as podiatrists in medicine to show you there are other options for you to study. Gives you that clinical relationship, that interaction with patients that isn't necessarily medicine and isn't as hard and as long as medicine, okay? So that's my goal. So if you're interested in that, like, maybe subscribe and we can figure that out as we go. What I would do again is, if I could do it again, I would do a Bachelor of Science. And what I would do is I would tailor my majors and minors to something that is in need. So one thing in being in WA, one thing that I found is in need is occupational health and safety. That is a big thing on mining sites. And that is a great paying job that you can get that will allow you to get paid well and also work towards GAMSAT or whatever it is that you're doing in the background if you're considering doing that after you graduate. Also, what I want you to do is when you're studying your undergraduate, I want you to consider doing tutoring or signing up for something like that that will allow you to work from home. Might not be your kettle of fish now. You might not need to do it now. It might only pay a little bit now. But if you get used to tutoring young undergraduate students or you tutor some high school students, that will benefit you in two ways, because a lot of the people that are in my course are able to do something remotely or something that they can control their schedule. And a lot of those are tutors. So that's a real benefit for you if you get in and when you get into medicine. You know, for me, that was a little shameless plug here. I do acting teaching that sustains me throughout my studies. And a lot of people who do tutoring also benefit from that. But also the great thing about tutoring, especially things like physics and chemistry, it's really good for that GAMSAT because you need to know this content inside out so you can explain it to someone. And it kind of has that double effect of, you know, you learn more when you teach somebody else. So I think it's actually something that I massively overlooked because I was, you know, a little bit insecure about, you know, my ability to do chemistry and physics because I had never done any of that stuff before until I did my undergrad. Luckily, I got good grades in it, but I didn't feel like I understood it well enough to teach it. So that's something that I would do again. Now, let's come to the actual study of studying. You've chosen your undergrad. You figured out that you're doing tutoring. You've done all that. Now you start. Now, what happens here? First thing for me is you need to be extremely organized, okay? Because to get what you need, let's be honest, you need to get HDs to get into medicine. Like, you don't need it, but it increases your chances so much more. And if you aim for a 7 GPA or you aim for HDs and you land somewhere just below, then that's way better than doing it half, you know? So for me, the big thing was organization. So having a calendar and living by it, knowing what's going on and reviewing it regularly is something that I found to be an incredible resource, because for me, having a calendar frees up my mental load so that when I'm studying, I can truly focus just on studying. I can truly focus on that essay that I'm writing, or that thing that I'm researching, or that exam I'm studying for, or the relationships that I have outside of study. So when I'm with my friends, I'm not worrying about what's coming up and what's due, because I've organized everything really well and structured it accordingly. And then living by it, which is really hard. I literally would just pull, as soon as someone says, do you want to do this on this day? I'd have to pull my calendar out, and I still do this today, and look and put it straight in. Even I put in placeholders. So when friends of mine are coming over, hey, I'm coming to your city from the 12th to the 28th. Great. It goes in my calendar. So I know, you know, John's coming next week. I need to try and make some time. Let me figure it out. Because a lot of other people won't be as organized as you, or are not as organized as me. And they'll go, oh, hey man, I'm leaving tomorrow. Do you want to hang out? No, I've got to study, man. I've scheduled in time to do this. And that's not to say that you should, you know, not hang out with your friends and all that kind of stuff. You just need to balance it in a way. And this will really massively help you going into medical school, because I'm only 2 months into medical school and it's like drinking from a fire hydrant. There is so much stuff to do and so much stuff to be across. And without having a disciplined approach like organization, I don't know, I'll probably be having more than the amount of panic attacks that I've been having thus far. Only a few. Not really panic attacks. Just you know, moments of dread where you're like, what am I doing? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Am I where I'm supposed to be? Have I done that thing? And you don't want to feel like that. You want to remove as much stress as you can. And then along with this organization thing that I have that I want to talk about is starting and asking early, right? So you get an assignment, cool. And to some of you, this might be basic stuff. That's totally fine. But to a lot of people that I've met, it's a new idea. Because often a lot of people that come into medicine or want to study medicine have either done really well at high school and they don't need to be organized because they can do everything last minute. Or they are like me and didn't do well in high school and have actually never known how to organize yourself. So going back to this, start and ask early. So you get an assignment that day or that night or the next day, like within 24 hours, I will start reading and researching the thing. It's not intense. It's not a deep dive. It's just, okay, it's about, my assignment's about hemolytic anemia. Cool. What does that mean? I'm going to read like a couple of review papers on that just to skim, just to understand what it is and make a little research document. So I'm just doing something and understanding exactly what is required from the assignment guidelines and things like that. And then what I'll also do is I'll set myself a goal of having the assignment basically 99% done 1 week before the due date. Now, look, this is not something that always happens, but it is definitely something that I attempt and try to do. And I recommend you do as well, because it just gives you that extra breathing room to edit out all those weird things that you do and just get a couple of people to have a look at it for you and say, hey, you know, what do you think of this? And I find that helps a lot. And you get to be a bit smug because people are like, have you done the thing? And I'm like, yeah, I've already done it. They're like, oh, I haven't even started it yet. And they're doing it like a week before or the night before, you know, and you don't do your best work the day before. It's just, let's be honest, that doesn't happen. Okay, so another thing I want to talk about with study is motivation, right? So I really struggle with motivation, as we all do. You know, you can only be like emotionally motivated some of the time. And you can't rely on that vibe of, oh, I just need to be inspired to study. And this comes from my time as an actor, as an artist. You know, there are times when you're insanely inspired and you're just really feeling connected to the work and everything's going great. But that's like 10% of the time. Other times you just need to get down and start doing something. And then it kind of comes about, just like this podcast, even this episode. I've been thinking about it, lamenting on it for a while. And I thought, you know, when the time is right, I'll do it. And then I'll do it. But, you know, I got home from uni today and I thought, you know, my brain is fried. I can't study, but I want to do something productive. Podcast it is. So let's do that. So what do I do to stay motivated? So I've got a couple of little tricks. One thing is I just treated it like a job. So I was lucky enough to be working in industry for many years before I came back to study and studied science. And, you know, working 40 hours a week and doing overtime is way harder than being able to study whenever you want, but having to study a lot. Because when you're working, there's sometimes you're just like, I just need to have a nap. I cannot physically stay awake. And no matter how many coffees or whatever you do, you still can't stay awake. You can't leave. Whereas study, if you really are not vibing it, you can go have a nap. It's totally fine. So what I recommend you do is set a 15-minute timer. Just say, look, I'm not feeling it, but I'm going to set a 15-minute timer and I'm just going to start working. And if I still don't feel like working at the end of that 15-minute timer, I will stop and go have a nap or go do something that I enjoy. And like 80, 90% of the time, that works, because after 15 minutes, you're like, well, my brain waves, I'm sure there's some science, neuroscience to it. My brain waves have changed from this like haphazard creative energy to focused energy. And now let's just go with it. And on the treating it like a job thing as well, I would say, you know, and this kind of might sound a bit insane to some people, but for the first 6 months, because I just felt so guilty that I wasn't actually working and, you know, being productive in the community, and I didn't work for the first 6 months of my degree because I was like freaking out that I wouldn't be able to, you know, achieve what I wanted to achieve. I did a timesheet, and I reviewed the timesheet every day, and I would go, okay, I've only done this many hours, and the timesheet would be based on a timer that I would set. So like, if anybody's heard of Pomodoro, so I do like 25 minutes and 5 minutes off, or 45 minutes or 50 minutes and 10 minutes off. That's the time that counted. It wasn't sitting in the library and, you know, so-and-so comes by, hey, how you going, man? What's going on? It was purely productive time. And, you know, that doesn't mean you're going to do 10 hours productive a day. Some days you might, but not often, because that's just grueling. But that really kind of kept me accountable. And it was good to like look back on the week and also like audit what specific tasks I was spending a lot of time on. And then when I got my grades back, to correlate that, and this is probably too much in an analytical frame, but look at it and go, okay, I put this many hours in and I got this back. What does that mean? Do I need to evaluate my study technique, or do I need to learn more and understand that, draw on different resources, because I'm clearly not understanding these concepts the first time around. So yeah, that was another way. And then another thing as well, and this is more to do with exams, I would always take the day before the exam off. That would be free. And again, some people clutch their pearls at this, you know, that's one whole day of studying that you know, you're not going to get back. But for me, coming from a creative background where performance and the day of the performance is really important, I saw the exam like a performance. So what I wanted to do was give my brain a break and just chill myself out. You know, you can't really relax too much before a big exam, especially when you're stressed. But because I'd studied very, very hard up until that moment, I looked forward. I was like, I want the exam to come so I can have that day off. And then often I was so prepared and relaxed and, you know, my head was in the right space. I was driving to the exam like, get me in there. Let me get this stuff out of my brain so I can forget about it and not worry about it ever again. Well, I don't think that now, because I will need this information. But in my undergrad, that's how I felt. And then let's talk about the actual act of working hard, right? I've talked about getting into the course. I've talked about how to be organized and how to motivate yourself. But something that my parents, school teachers, everybody like that used to tell me growing up, oh, you're not dumb. You've got so much potential. You just need to work hard. And I thought, oh, you know, work hard. I could do that. What does that mean? And nobody could really explain it to me. They would say things like, you just need to study hard. What do you mean by that? Like, show me what that means. I'm going to tell you what that means right now, what it means to me. Okay. It does not mean sitting and rewriting your notes in different colored pencils and then rewriting them again and again and again. It is using Anki and spaced repetition. Now, if you haven't heard about Anki, this is definitely not a training course, and there are people who explain it in a way better way than me. But Anki is basically a digital flashcard application on your computer that you can create flashcards and libraries of flashcards. And it has an algorithm in it, and there's many different algorithms. They're just like politics. Everybody thinks theirs is the best, but there's many different algorithms. Mine is the best, by the way. There's many algorithms that show you a card on one day, and then in 3 days, and then in 6 days, and, you know, up until the exam. And this is based on science, on the forgetting curve. You know, if you read something once and then a month later you get tested on it, how well do you do compared to if you read it once on the first day, once on the second day, then on the fourth day, fifth day, 10th day, 13th, you know, and so on and so forth. So have a look at that. Have a look at spaced repetition. There's so many videos on YouTube about it. I'm not going to go over it. This is how I would use Anki and spaced repetition in my workflow. Okay. So there is basically two steps to my learning. One is encoding. So that's understanding the information. So I would get my lecture slides up and I would make notes that would help me understand the content, right? And this can take time. This can take a while. Some concepts, I remember one exam, I remember one unit, the teacher was so, people say smart, but I think smart people can explain stuff simply. So I wouldn't say she's dumb, but she was definitely not a good teacher. She was an academic, a true academic. She had this one slide and it, she explained it so poorly. It took me, I think it was like 5 hours to understand truly what that slide meant. And luckily it came up on the exam. But this is what I'm saying, right? So if you're sitting here, and this is something that I used to struggle with, right? If you're sitting there trying to understand a topic or a thing, you're not dumb. You are not stupid. Just say that to yourself. You are not dumb or stupid, okay? A lot of the concepts that we are learning are one human being's entire life's work, especially in chemistry, right? So chemistry for one semester every week, so what's that, like 12, 13 weeks, we learn a new concept every week. And each of those concepts was some one individual's life's work. So if you're not understanding it the first time, chill the F out. It's okay. All right. So I'm making notes to understand, and this can take some time, but I'm distilling the information to what I need to know and how, or in a way that I understand it. And then I make Anki cards or an Anki deck for each unit, right? The unit is the parent folder. And then there's children folders of that unit folder, which are all the weeks, right? So week one, this week two, week two. So I can study both the week or the whole semester if I want. And this helps in two ways, because you can learn that one week and then you can go back and review, and it just makes it less workload to do. If you see 600 cards, that's going to be like, oh my God, it's going to take me too long, I can't do it. But if you see like 70 cards, that's a doable number, okay? So that's something that I recommend you do. And then when you're making the cards, okay, again, I might just give you a little Anki rundown, but you just make simple cards. There's so many people out there that show me their cards, or they share a deck and they go, yeah, these are great cards. And they've got sentences and essays of things in there. And you're like, what? How are you going to do it? So what I do is I've got some shortcuts like F hash for function, S hash for structure, L hash for location, P hash for properties, and then list and blah, blah, blah. So say it's like list the steps of transmission of an action potential across a synaptic cleft, right? That's going to be like a 6-step process. The title of the card is list hyphen steps hyphen AP across synaptic cleft, right? So when I'm looking at that, I know, cool, that's what we want. Then I list the 6 steps in as much what is called the minimum information necessary. And look up this concept as well. It's the purely distilled information that you need to understand and recall the topic and get it right, but also not too much faff, right? Because science loves faffs, propagates and blah, 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 like conjugates and blah, like don't make big words. Just like it joins the thing to the thing. If that's what you need to say, it joins the thing to the thing. You don't need to say creates a complex, like blah, blah, blah. But as long as you know what that means, right? You need to understand first. And what I'll do is I will close delete. If it's a really tricky one, I'll close delete words in each sentence. Then I'll close delete every step. And then I'll close delete if there's 6 steps. 2 sets of 3. So I'm getting so many cards from this. So it's not just 5 cards. It's going to be potentially like 15 cards. But best thing is they're 15 quick cards. Whereas if you had one card that's these 6 points, it's going to take you such a long time. You're going to get dismayed. You're going to get disheartened. And you're just going to be, you know, you're going to give up. And I can tell you why, because that's what I used to do. You make these really quick cards to do that you just need to go bang, 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 and you can get them out really quickly. So that's what I recommend you do. And then the next thing as well, and that's what I recommend you do. So the next thing after that is, as I was talking about this big workload, you want to do a minimum of 30 new cards a day and 60 reviews per day. And you can set this up, Google how to do this. You can set this up in Anki really easily. And this allows you to have a manageable workload each day, but still feel like you're achieving something. But what I want you to do is aim for doing like an hour and a half, maybe 40 minutes per day to get through all the cards, right? And this is really the crux of the hard work, right? Like creating the cards and understanding stuff is learning, but the memorization. So we've done the encoding and now we're memorizing it, right? This Anki process is so difficult and painful. I cannot explain how painful it is. But It is the closest thing to, I don't know if you've seen The Matrix, where they just like upload stuff to their brain. This is the closest thing to The Matrix that I have found. Let me know if there's another thing, because I'm down for that and I need it desperately right now. But currently, this is the best thing. And the reason why, again, not a neuroscientist, but the scientists say that when you're, the actual act of learning or memorizing is you struggling to remember that thing. So when you go, oh, I think it's acetylcholine binds to the junction, I don't know, I can't remember, and you see it, that struggle is actually what is forming that neural link. When you don't get it, don't be dismayed, don't be disheartened. It is part of the process, and get used to it, because this is going to be your life if you want to be a doctor. So you're doing flashcards, everything's going great, your life is best, everybody loves you, you're amazing, you're organized, you're motivated, you're doing everything well. And then you're doing flashcards and you cannot remember because everything looks the same. You're trying to memorize the different types of bacteria, the different types of gram-positive bacteria, the different types of gram-negative, and they're all staph something, blah, blah, blah. And they all have a similar, you know, symptoms and they affect the same population. And you need to learn this. You need to get it in your brain. That's where I introduce tables. Tables, my friend, okay? When you have things that are too similar to differentiate on flashcards, you need to go into Excel or Word and create a table. And you print that table out and you can either image, well, I do both. So what I want you to do is image occlude on Anki, the points that you need to memorize, and then also write out, get used to writing out that table. What happens then is you're going to write it every day. This is two benefits, right? You have a low effort, low energy way to study. So that day you wake up or you're hungover and you're just like, no, I'm not going to do any study, but you feel so anxious and you need to study. You can get this table out and rewrite this table. And it's really not the most effective, but it is something that you can do. And the goal is to write it out from memory at some point. If you do it every day, you will get there really quickly. But it also does this thing where it creates this amazing network. It's kind of like a mind map, but I don't like mind maps for some reason. I like the idea of mind maps. I've always wanted to be a mind mapper, but I can never seem to... I think I haven't found a decent software or anything like that to do with. But I digress. It creates this map in your mind of where, but it's not a mind map, of where things are. So what I did was I arranged all the staph, which is gram positive bacteria. I don't know. I can't remember. In alphabetical order, right? So staph epidermis, and then I can't remember because this is a couple years ago now, but I arranged them in alphabetical order because that made sense to me. And then now every time I think about staph epidermis, I think of that table. I can't see the rest of the table, but I know it's in the top left-hand corner of the table. That's the level that you want to get to with that table thing. And this is massive turbo, you know, trying to get ducks energy, which I don't recommend you do, but I kind of do recommend you do. It's completely up to you, but this is what I did, and it was kind of insane. And when I tell people that, they look at me like I'm crazy. So, you know, with all those caveats, I guess I'm saying I have insight into how crazy I am with regards to this. This is what I call the final boss. So what I would do is throughout the semester, from the learning outcomes or objectives for each lecture, I would make questions. And usually they're just like, you know, when one of the learning outcomes is like, describe the three phases of whatever. Cool. That's one of the things. And then I would print two sheets of paper, both with the questions, but one would just have a space for me to handwrite answers and the other one would have the answers on them. And the answers, the points that I would assign per answer were in brackets next to the question, right? Then 2 to 3 days out from the exam, I would go through and answer all of the questions. And this usually took like, I'm really ashamed to even say this now, but 8 to 10 hours, right? And it was painful. It was extremely painful, but it had two massive, 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 massive benefits. You learnt to write your answers because in my exams, they were handwritten and I've spent the whole semester doing flashcards, which is great for fact learning, but I need to learn to communicate in written form. And that was good. And it got my hand into essay writing vibes for like fitness because I'm a typer. I don't like writing with my hands. But the other thing was I could then go through and mark it and it would alleviate any anxieties I would have because most of the time I would know like 70 to 80% of the stuff anyway at this point if you've done all this. And so I'm like, cool, worst case, if they ask me everything on the syllabus, which they won't, I'm going to know 80 to 90% of it. And the other thing is, I now can spend the next couple of days focusing on what I didn't get right. So I can target my efforts for the next couple of days rather than just frantically going over everything again and again and again. So that's where we're at, everybody. That's where we're at. The study is hard. That's how you work hard. And that's how you get, you know, relatively close to HDs in most of your units. It's not fun. It's not fun, but it is a good achievement. And I think the other thing I'll say is it really sets you up well for medicine in the sense that you're being reflective in your practice. You're looking at your results and you're not trying the same thing. I want to take a minute just to talk about some of the people that I studied with who were actually incredibly intelligent. They were much more intelligent than I. We were in lectures and they would understand things straight away. The lecturer would ask them questions and they would always put their hand up and get everything right. And I always felt like such a dummy. I was like, gosh, I don't understand this. I have to go home and watch this lecture 5 more times for me to understand it. But somehow, because they weren't applying their knowledge and continually testing them and they didn't have a flow, they would often get far worse scores than me. And for me, sometimes, and every time for me, at the end of semester, that's when I would, you know, string it all together and get it in the exam at the end, which is all that counts really. And I guess that's the other thing I want to say. This is by far not my view now being in medicine, but before I got into medicine, I initially started out thinking, oh gosh, you know, I need to learn biomedical science. You know, I need to learn hematology. I need to learn this, that, and the other. You don't. You don't. You really don't. You need to learn what is in the exam. Let's be honest. That's exactly what you need to learn. You're not learning to be a scientist, because even if you are trying to become a scientist, the scientists don't do it until they've got a master's or PhD at a minimum. So that's going to be another 7 years away for you. At the moment, what counts is getting the highest grades possible, and figuring out how to do that is what counts. And I think this blueprint that I've got here that you can borrow is certainly one of the ways, and it worked for me. I really would love to hear from anybody out there that has, you know, antithetical views that says, you know, you could improve this. I'm all ears for that. There's a big thing about, you know, education influencers now, people who are education coaches, and I'm all for that. That's great if that's going to help. But just make sure you're auditing whether it works or not. Okay. Don't just blindly follow into these things. And if it's not working for you, don't keep going. And I think, you know, that's the same for, you know, any of my advice as well. Like if something's not working for you, then find another thing. But I've generally found, and the people that I've connected with who have been successful as well, have connected with my, this is not just mine. This is based on lots of other people's views and their opinions and things like that. Okay, well, that concludes part one of how to get into postgraduate medicine in Australia. We've got more episodes coming up, taking a bit more of a deeper dive, looking at GAMSAT, looking at interview, extracurricular activities, and medical school application strategy, which I think is often overlooked sometimes. My name's Alexander. This has been the Ivy League MD podcast. If you know somebody that might benefit from this or you found this useful and valuable, please share it with them. It goes a long way in growing the podcast. Thank you.